At the jail, Frank rolled out the prisoners and collected the bedpots. Then he made coffee and shaved and dressed. Black trousers, new red and white checkered shirt buttoned up at the collar, string tie, and the suit coat he bought at the general store the day before.
How about coffee and some breakfast, Morgan?
Coffee's almost ready. I'll get your breakfast in a few minutes.
At the cafe, Frank got some trays, beef, fried potatoes, cornmeal mush, and got the meat cut up so each prisoner could eat with a spoon. The prisoners fed, Frank turned up the lamps, sat down at his desk, and brought his jail journal up to date. Then he wrote several wires to send about his new inmates and the dead man. Dawn was busting over the mountains when he finished. Frank checked on the prisoners, then walked over to the cafe for his own breakfast. He took the empty trays with him, after carefully checking to make sure all the spoons were there. With a little work, a spoon could be turned into a deadly weapon. Frank ordered breakfast and sat at a corner table, drinking coffee until the food arrived. It was pointless to ask Angie if she'd seen any strangers in town, for the town was full of newcomers. During the next few weeks, there would be hundreds more streaming in. Frank made up his mind to hire a deputy.
Angie, do you know a good man I could take on as deputy?
Yeah, I think I do, matter of fact. He ought to be coming in here any time now. He's a man in his mid-50s, I'd guess. He's steady and dependable. I think he's done some deputy work in other places.
Sounds good to me. What's his name?
Jerry. Jerry Dobbs.
Introduce me when he comes in.
I'll do that.
Frank was just finishing his breakfast when Angie called out.
Morning, Jerry. Got someone here who wants a word with you.
Oh?
Frank rose to his boots to meet the big man. The men shook hands and Jerry sat down at the table with Frank. A few minutes later, Frank hired a deputy.
I'm no miner. Didn't take me long to figure that out. I've worked a lot of things in my life, but lawn is something I enjoy the best.
It can be rewarding. Until the town is cleaned up. Then the people want to get rid of you.
For a fact. I've seen that happen a time or two.
This town is going to boom for a while. I'm going to ask the mayor if I can hire a second deputy.
Might not be a bad idea. I've seen these boom towns go from 100 people to 5,000 in a matter of days. The way I heard it, this is a major strike, too.
Frank liked the older man almost instantly. Jerry was big and solid and well-spoken. Frank could sense he had plenty of staying power, and once he made up his mind, it would take a steam engine to move him. Frank told Jerry about the kidnapping attempt against Vivian and his hiring of two bodyguards for her.
Hal and Jimmy are known throughout the West as men who brook no nonsense. Not killers, but damn sure quick on a shoot. They'll take care of her.
I'm counting on that. Jerry, there's a small living area in the jail. You want to use it?
Yes. Sure beats paying a weekly rate for a room with two other guys.
As soon as you finish your breakfast, we'll go over to the jail and see what you need for your living quarters. Then go to the store for provisions.
Sounds good to me.
By that time, the mayor should be in his office at the bank, and we'll get you sworn in. Jerry, you haven't asked about salary.
I know what boomtowns pay their lawmen. It will be more than adequate, I'm sure.
I'll see that it is.
Angie came over and refilled their cups. The customers were all served and chowing down. No one was calling for anything, so she pulled out a chair and sat down.
Gonna be a law dog again, Jerry?
Beats the minds, Angie.
I'm sure. Unless you're the owner.
Frank Morgan! Get out here, you bastard!
What the hell?
Frank got up and looked out the window. A man was standing in the center of the wide street. He was wearing two guns. A rarity in the waning days of the so-called Wild West.
You know that man, Frank?
I never saw him before, but he sure as hell is mad.
Jerry joined them at the window.
I've seen him around town a time or two. Don't know his name.
Morgan! You murdering pile of coyote puke! Get out here and face me!
I don't think that fella out there likes me very much.
Jerry looked at Frank and smiled and shook his head at the marshal's calmness.
I think you'd be safe in saying that, Frank.
Did you see anyone with the guy, Jerry? Anyone at all?
No, never. I never even seen him talking to anyone.
Both sides of the street cleared of people within seconds. The few horses at hitch rails were quickly led away by their owners.
You either come out here and face me, or I'm coming in there and drag you out, you yellow bastard. By God, I mean it, Morgan.
Time to go see what that fellow wants.
Hell, Frank, you know what he wants. He wants to kill you.
He's not the first. And won't be the last.
Angie put a hand on Frank's arm.
He may have someone in hiding, Frank. Not many men would face you alone. It's something to consider.
Frank cut his eyes to her.
I always take that into consideration. That's one of the reasons I'm still alive. But I'm Marshall here. I can't afford to let something like this get out of hand. It could very easily. If it did, that'd be the end of law and order in this town.
Angie opened her mouth to speak. Jerry held up a hand.
He's right, Angie. I know you got a shotgun behind the counter. Give it to me and I'll back him up.
All right.
Angie hurried behind the counter and returned with a long-barreled scatter gun.
It's got light loads in it, but at close range, they'll sure put someone out of commission.
Good enough.
Jerry broke open the scatter gun to make certain both chambers were loaded up. He looked at Frank.
You ready?
You sure you want to do this, Jerry? Oh, man, you're not even on the payroll yet.
Well, maybe you can arrange a bonus for me.
Done.
Come on out, you chicken-livered has-been!
That does it.
None of the principals noticed the young man across the street stop on the boardwalk, stand, and stare. Dressed in his stylish business suit, he was as out of place as a buffalo turd in a crystal punch bowl.
What in the world is going on?
He asked a clerk who was sweeping the boardwalk.
There's gonna be a gunfight.
Why doesn't someone call the marshal?
Someone just did, boy. That fella standing in the street.
My word.
Frank stepped out the front door of the cafe, taking his time while Jerry hustled out the back door and made his way to the street, coming up the narrow space between two buildings. The small crowd gathered on the boardwalks moved left and right, out of the line of fire, they hoped. Frank looked more closely at the man in the street. He did not recognize him and did not think he ever saw him before.
What's your problem?
You! You're the problem, Morgan.
Why, I never seen you before. I don't know you.
I know you.
How?
You killed my brother up in Wyoming. Jim Marsh was his name, remember?
Can't say as I do. What's your name?
Calvin. The man is gonna kill you, Morgan.
Doubtful, Calvin. Very doubtful.
You calling me a liar? Damn you, you back-shooting lowlife.
I never shot anyone named Morris. Not in the back or anywhere else.
You're a liar, Morgan. You ambushed him one night and shot him in the back.
Not me, Calvin. You're the wrong man.
You're both a liar and a coward, Morgan.
You're wrong on both counts. Think about it. Don't throw away your life.
Enough talk, Morgan. Walk out here and face me if you got the guts.
That settled the question in Frank's mind about a second hidden gunman. He and Morris were in full open view of each other. So the hidden gunman must not as yet have a good shot at Frank. He hoped Jerry got the message.
What's the matter, Calvin? Can't you see me? You need glasses, maybe?
I can see you, Morgan. I don't need no damn glasses.
Then let's get this over with. I'm tired of trying to save your life.
Huh?
You seem determined to end your life this morning. I've tried to keep you from doing that, but you won't listen. So let's do it, Calvin. Enough talking.
Calvin looked up for just a second. That was the signal Frank needed. The second gunman was on the roof of the cafe, or one of the buildings just left or right of the cafe. As long as Frank stayed under the awning, he was safe from the sniper.
I knowed you was yeller, Morgan. I'm challenging you to stop all this talk and step out here and face me.
Hook and draw, Calvin. You can see me.
You're yeller. I knowed all along you was yeller. Told everybody I'd prove it.
And you're a loudmouthed son of a bitch.
That got to Calvin, if Calvin was his real name, which Frank doubted. The man tensed, and Frank could see his expression change.
You'll pay for that, Morgan.
How? You're gonna have your buddy on the roof shoot me in the back?
Take him, Lou! Take him now! He's on to us!
Calvin, or Lou, hesitated for just a second, then grabbed for his pistol. Frank shot him twice, just as he was clearing leather. He placed his shots fast but carefully, knocking both legs out from under the man.
Oh, my ass! You done ruined me! Oh.
He took both barrels of Jerry's scattergun in the butt and landed on his belly on the boardwalk, the wind knocked out of him. Jerry stepped out of the alley, a six-gun in his hand.
Watch him.
Frank walked over to the fallen man in the dusty and now bloody street.
Calvin or Lou?
Lou, you bastard. You done broke both my legs.
That was my intention.
Damn your eyes.
Lou what?
Lou Manning.
Well, now. I have a dodger on you over in the office. Another $500 in my pocket.
That's an old dodger. It's $1,000 now.
Oh, that's even better. How about your buddy over there?
Bud Chase. He ain't got no money on his head. You gonna find me a Dr. Morgan?
I see him coming now. Was that you prowling around outside my house this morning?
Huh? No. I don't even know where you live, Morgan. I wish to God I'd never seen you. Where's that damn Sawbones?
Taking a look at your buddy's butt. He's got 2 loads of birdshot in his ass.
Oh, the hell with Bud's butt. My leg's busted, God damn it.
Doc Bracken came over and looked at Lou's wounds.
Well, neither leg seems to be broken, but you won't be doing much walking around for a while.
Well, I really hurt something fierce, Doc. Can you give me something for the pain?
When we get you settled in the jail.
How's the other one?
Very uncomfortable, and he's going to be even more so when I start probing around for that birdshot.
Frank waved at some men.
Get these two over to the jail.
He looked at Doc Bracken.
Unless you want them in your office.
Oh, jail will be fine. Neither one of them are in any danger of expiring. Your jail's getting full, isn't it, Marshal?
I'll have 2 cells left after those two are booked.
And what happens if your jail gets full?
I'll chain prisoners outside to a hitch rail.
Bracken gave him a hard look.
And you would, too, wouldn't you, Marshal?
Bet on it.
I think you'll be the best marshal this town ever had, Morgan. Providing you live long enough, that is.
Thank you, Doc. How soon can I ask these two a few questions?
A couple of hours, maybe. Probably longer. I'm going to sedate them heavily. I'll let you know.
Good enough.
The wounded were carried off to the jail. Dirt was kicked over the bloody spot in the street, and Frank told Jerry to locate one of the town's carpenters and have him get busy repairing the awning and the broken boardwalk. He sent another man to find the mayor and arrange for a meeting. Conrad stood motionless in the doorway across the street. Frank spotted the young man and walked over to him.
How is your mother this morning, Conrad?
Very well, Marshal. Thank you for inquiring. That was quite a performance a few moments ago. Do you always twirl your pistol after a shooting?
Frank did not remember doing that. It was just something he did automatically.
I suppose so, Conrad. Just a habit.
Very impressive, I must say. You are quite proficient with that weapon.
I try.
Tell me, Marshal, if you will, how long have you known my mother?
Frank had no idea what Viv told the young man, but he wasn't going to start off whatever relationship that might develop with a lie.
I knew her years ago, Conrad. For a very brief time.
Before she married my father?
Yes.
I see. Well, at least you both have your stories straight. Good day, Marshal.
Conrad turned away and walked off toward the Henson Enterprises office building without another word.
Oh, boy, damn sure suspect something is not quite right.
Frank knew he and Viv better get their heads together to plan something, and quickly. Mayor Jenkins strolled up, all smiles.
Well, Marshal, congratulations. I was just informed about the incident. Quite a dandy bit of shooting on your part, I understand. Knocked the pins out from under that gumming quicker than the eye could follow. And I'm told you have a new deputy. Anyway, consider him on the payroll.
He named a very generous monthly sum of money, about twice the going rate, even for a boomtown.
Now, you can swear him in. That goes with the office, Marshal. I should be hearing something from Arkansas in about a week. I'll let you know immediately. Good day, Marshal. Great job you're doing. Yes, indeed.
Most happy fellow.
Frank went in search of Jerry to swear him in. Frank did not notice Conrad peeping around the corner of a building, watching his every move. Frank swore Jerry in as deputy marshal and pinned a badge on him. Then they went over to Willis's store and bought provisions for the small private room at the jail. Back at the jail, Frank fixed a pot of coffee and the two men talked while Doc Bracken worked on the wounded in the cell block.
Never married, Jerry?
Once. I had two kids. A boy and a girl. Wife didn't like the West. She really didn't like me, I guess. We lived in Kansas. Took the kids and left one day when I was out with a posse. I've not seen hide nor hair of any of them since. That was 20 years ago. Don't know where they are. You, Frank?
Long time ago, right after the war. We weren't married long. Didn't work out. I've been drifting ever since.
Yeah, me too. But I don't blame that on her. I reckon I'm just meant to wander, that's all.
Jerry stood up.
I need to go back to the rooming house and get my things, Frank. Okay with you?
Sure, go ahead. I got an appointment to see Mrs. Browning this morning. I'll probably be gone time you get back.
That's a nice lady.
Yes, she certainly is.
Jerry left, and Frank looked in on Doc Bracken and his assistant.
You're going to be much longer, Doc.
About 10 more minutes. I've got all the shot out of this man's butt than I can. The rest will have to stay. Some will work out in time, but he'll be sitting on a lot of birdshot for the rest of his life.
I'll kill that son of a bitch who shot me.
Shut up. You'll have lots of time to think up threats while you're in prison. You better be thankful it wasn't buckshot that hit you, fella. You wouldn't have any ass left.
Give me some more laudanum.
You've had enough.
Frank closed the door and sat down at his desk, bringing his jail book up to date. He checked all his dodgers for one on Bud Chase. There were no wanted flyers on Bud, but he did find the dodger on Lou Manning. He wrote out a wire to send to the Texas Rangers. Frank glanced at the wall clock. He had a few minutes before he was due to meet Viv. Frank leaned back in the wooden swivel chair. He did not delude himself about the likelihood of getting back with Viv. Chances were slim to none. Their worlds were too far apart now. Frank was man enough to admit that. But they would enjoy each other's company while they had the opportunity. After that, well... Frank looked in on the prisoners, giving them a cup of coffee if they wanted it, then closed and locked the door to the cell block. He gave Jerry a set of keys to all doors, so he locked the front door upon leaving, too. Frank strolled down the boardwalk, taking his time and looking over the town in broard daylight. A few of the boarded-up stores were already in the process of reopening, getting ready to rent. He was told the bank owned them. Mayor Jenkins didn't miss a bet. If there was a dollar to be made, as banker, he was going to get a part of it. Already, new people were coming in from tiny communities close by, all of the newcomers riding in. Soon, the wagons would be rolling in. When the permanent structures were all taken, wouldn't be long, wooden frames would appear with canvas fastened in place, forming roofs and sides. There would be a dozen makeshift saloons and eating places and what have you thrown up in less than a week. Sporting girls would be working around the clock. So would the gamblers. Both spelled trouble with a capital T. Frank walked into the Henson Enterprises building and passed the workers in the front office just as Viv was coming out of her rear office. She saw him and smiled.
Be with you in a moment, Marshall.
She was all very proper and correct. He looked behind him. Hal was standing in the outer office. They nodded at each other. Jimmy would be working the outside, Frank figured. Every hour or so, the men would swap. Viv motioned for Frank to come into her office. She closed the door and stood facing him.
Are you all right, Frank?
I'm fine.
Conrad told me about the shooting incident.
Frank shrugged that off.
Where is Conrad?
At the mine. For his age, he's really a very responsible young man. He knows the business.
I'm sure he is, Viv. I'm sure he's a big help. He just doesn't much care for me, that's all.
Give him time. Maybe things will change.
Yeah, maybe they will. We'll see. Ready to take a stroll through town?
That will set some tongues wagging.
I bother you?
Not in the least. I'll get my parasol.
With Hal and Jimmy hanging back a respectable distance, the two began their leisurely walk. The gunfighter and the lady. That would make a good title for a dime novel. Heads did turn as the two walked slowly toward the Silver Spoon Cafe. Vivian, dressed in the height of Eastern fashion, was a beautiful woman. Frank wondered why women toted around little parasols and didn't open them. What the hell was the point, anyway? The sky was a dazzling clear blue, and it sure wasn't raining. Besides, he didn't figure that dainty little thing would even do much to keep off rain. He concluded he would never understand women.
Town's being reborn.
Sure is. This your first boomtown, Vim?
Yes.
Now, you ain't seen nothing yet. If this strike turns out to be as big as people are saying, there'll be 1,000 more people packed in here before it's all over. Maybe more than that. It'll be a great, big, sometimes uncontrollable mess.
You've worn a badge in other boomtowns, Frank?
Yeah, several of them.
I've tried to keep track of you over the years, but it hasn't been easy.
I'm sure. I did move around a lot.
And often disappeared for months at a time. Where did you go and what did you do during those times?
Sometimes I worked on a ranch under a false name.
For $30 a month?
Less than that a few times.
But somebody would always come along who recognized you.
Yeah, or someone would get their hands on one of those damn books. All of them, nothing but a pack of lies.
I've read all of them.
Frank cut his eyes to the woman walking by his side.
Oh, you're joking, of course.
No, I swear it's the truth. I had to hide them from my husband and from Conrad. It was a deliciously naughty feeling.
Oh. Reading the books about me or hiding them from your family?
She poked him in the ribs.
Did you really take up with a soiled dove named Hannah?
Oh, hell no. Her name was Agnes.
And she died in your arms after stepping in front of a bullet meant for you.
Slowest bullet since the invention of guns, I reckon. Took the writer a whole page to get the bullet from one side of the room to the other.
You read them, Frank?
Oh, parts of some of them. I haven't read any of the newer ones.
I have a confession to make.
Huh?
The man who writes those novels was a good friend of my husband. He lives in Boston. He used to come over to the house quite often for croquet and dinner.
Hmm. Is that so? How difficult was it for you to keep a straight face?
Terribly difficult.
Oh, Vivian, that is lovely.
Their conversation ground to an abrupt halt when they met a gaggle of ladies coming out of Willis's general store. The ladies had to stop and chat for a few minutes with Vivian, oohing and aahing about her dress and hat. Frank stepped over to one side, rolled a cigarette, smoked, and waited for the impromptu hen party to end.
Good day.
When the gossiping was over and the town's ladies sashayed on their way, Viv smiled at Frank.
Sorry about that, Frank.
It's all right. What in the world did you ladies talk about?
Well, you, mostly.
Me?
Yes. They wanted to know how I knew you.
And what'd you tell them?
The same thing I told Conrad, that I knew you years ago when you were a young cowboy.
Conrad doesn't believe that.
You know something?
What?
Those ladies didn't either.
By nightfall, thanks in no small part to the ladies who chatted with Viv earlier, it was the talk of the town that Mrs. Vivian L. Browning, president of Penson Enterprises, was seeing the town marshal, Frank Morgan. Tongues were wagging in every store, home, saloon, and body house. Frank and Jerry saw the prisoners fed and locked down, then made their early evening rounds.
There's the first wagon coming in. They must have traveled all night after hearing the news off the wire.
There'll be 100 more by week's end. We're gonna have our hands full.
The sign on the side of the gaily painted wagon read, Dr. Rufus J. Martin, dentist extraordinaire.
What the hell does extraordinaire mean?
Extra special, I suppose, would be one definition.
What's so special about getting a tooth pulled?
Frank did not reply to the question. His gaze was on a man riding slowly up the street. His duster was caked with trail dirt. His horse plodded wearily. Rider and horse had come a long way. Jerry followed Frank's eyes.
You know that man, Frank?
Yeah, that's Robert Mallory. Big Bob, from out of the Cherokee Strip.
I've heard of him. He's a bad one, isn't he?
One of the worst. He's an ambusher. Paid assassin. He's probably got 36 kills on his tally sheet. From California to Missouri. Most of them backshot. He rides into an area someone has found dead. He rides out.
He's never been charged?
No proof he ever did anything. Dead men don't talk, Jerry.
But I've heard he's a gunfighter.
He is. He's quick as a snake if you push him. Big Bob is no coward, believe that. But he'd rather shoot his victim in the back.
Frank, no one just rides into this town by accident. It's too far off the path.
I know.
You think he's after Mrs. Browning?
Only God, Big Bob, and the one paying him knows the answer to that. But you can bet your best pair of boots he's after somebody.
Let's see where he lands for the night.
Best hotel in town, that's where. Bob goes first class all the way. That's his style.
Frank, he might be after you.
That thought crossed my mind.
You two know each other?
Oh, yes. For many years, he dislikes me as much as I do him.
Why?
The dislike?
Yes.
Well, we're opposites, Jerry. He'd kill anyone for money, man, woman, or child. And has. He doesn't have a conscience. There isn't the thinnest thread of morality in the man. And he doesn't just kill with a bullet. He'll throw a victim down a deep well, stand and listen to them scream for help until they drown. He'll set fire to a house, burn his victims to death. He'll do anything for money.
Sounds like a real charming fella.
Oh, he is. He swore to someday kill me. Swore that years ago.
Why?
I whooped him in a fight with my fists. Beat him bloody after he set a little dog on fire one night up in Wyoming. He carries the scars of that fight on his face. I hope I'm the person responsible for putting him in the grave.
Why did he do that? That's sick, Frank. Decent people wouldn't even think of doing that.
Because he wanted to do it, that's why. He's filth, that's all filth. Besides, I like dogs. If I ever settle down somewhere, I'll have a dozen mutts.
I've had a couple of dogs over the years. Last one died about 5 years ago. You know, I still miss the silly animal.
I know the feeling. What was his name?
Digger. That was the derndest dog for digging holes I ever did see. Let's take a walk over to the hotel and see what name Mallory registers under.
His own. He always does. He's an arrogant bastard. He knows there are no Dodgers out on him. He likes to throw his name up into the face of the law.
If he isn't after you, Frank, I'm surprised he came here knowing you're the marshal.
I doubt he knows.
Something about to happen at the Red Horse, Marshal. Gun trouble.
Go home. We'll handle it.
I'm gone. I don't like to be around no shooting.
The man hurried away.
Let's go earn our pay, Jerry.
No sooner had the words left his mouth.
Damn.
Frank and Jerry pushed open the bat wings and stepped into the smoke-filled saloon. A man lay dead on the dirty floor. Another man stood at the end of the bar, a pistol in his hand. Frank noted the six-gun was not cocked. The crowded saloon was silent. The piano player stopped his playing. The soiled doves stood or sat quietly.
Put the gun down, mister.
You go to hell, Morgan.
All in due time. Right now, though, I'm ordering you to put that gun away.
And if I don't?
I think you know the answer.
Your gun's in leather. I'm holding mine in my hand, Morgan.
You still die. Don't be a fool, man. If I don't get you, my deputy will.
Jerry stood about 15 feet to Frank's right.
What caused all this?
He called me a liar, and then threatened to kill me. I don't see I had no choice.
He's right, Marshal. I heard and seen it all.
All right. If it was self-defense, you've got no problem. Why are you looking for trouble with me?
Because you ain't taking me to jail, that's why.
I didn't say anything about jail, partner. I just asked you to put your gun away.
You ain't gonna try to haul me off to jail?
No, not if you shout in self-defense. Now put your pistol back in your holster.
All right, Marshal. I'm doing it real easy-like.
The man slipped his pistol back into leather and leaned against the bar. Frank walked over to the dead man on the floor and knelt down. The dead man's gun was about a foot from the body. It was cocked. Obviously, he had cleared leather when he was hit. Frank stood up.
I need some names.
My name's Ed Clancy. I don't know the name of the trouble hunter.
Anybody know who he is or where he's from?
No one did.
Get the undertaker, Jerry.
Jerry left the saloon. Frank walked over to the shooter by the bar.
Where are you from, Ed?
Colorado. I come down here to look for gold.
Gold?
Yeah, but there ain't none. Not enough for it to mess with, anyways.
The bartender was standing close by.
Coffee, please. You have a permanent address, Ed?
Not no more. You want me to stick around for a day or two?
If you don't mind.
I'll stay. I don't mind. Reason I got my back up was I figured you was going to kill me, Morgan. Sorry I crowded you.
It's all right, Ed. I understand. Where are you staying in town?
Over at Mrs. Miller's boarding house.
Thanks, Ed. I'll probably have all the paperwork done by tomorrow. You can pull out after that if you have a mind to.
Thanks, Marshal. You're all right in my book.
Undertaker Malone came in. Frank and Jerry watched as he went through the dead man's pockets looking for some identification. He found nothing. Malone stood up.
He's got enough money to bury him proper, Marshal, but no name.
Jerry circulated through the crowd in the Red Horse, asking about the dead man. No one knew who he was.
Put his gun and everything you found in his pockets on the bar, Malone. I'll hold it at the office.
How about his boots? They're near brand new.
Bury him with them on.
Well, that seems like a shame and a waste to me, Marshal.
Did I ask you?
No, sir.
Then get him out of here. Jerry, start poking around, see if you can locate the man's horse. I'll be here for a few more minutes.
Frank drank his coffee and watched as the body was carried out. The saloon swamper came over and mopped up the blood, then sprinkled sawdust over the wet spot. Frank waited by the bar until Jerry returned.
Man's horse was over at the livery, Frank. No saddlebags and no rifle in the boot.
All right. We'll check the hotel and the rooming houses tonight. If we don't have any luck there, we'll start checking the empty houses and tents in the morning.
Might not ever know who he is.
That might very well be true, Jerry. The West is full of unmarked graves. I put a few men in those unmarked graves myself.
Frank and Jerry drew a blank at the hotel and the town's several rooming houses. At the hotel, Frank pointed out a name on the register. Robert Mallory.
Big as brass.
He's proud of his name, for sure. Loves to flaunt it in the face of the law. Let's call it a night, Jerry. We'll start checking the town tomorrow.
Okay, Frank. You off to bed?
In a little while.
You want me to make the late rounds? I'd be glad to do it.
No, I'll do it. Thanks for the help tonight, Jerry. See you in the morning.
Frank stepped into the Silver Slipper Saloon and ordered coffee. He stood at the far end of the bar and drank his coffee, looking over the now thinning out crowd. A quiet crowd, as many had gone home for the night. A few people spoke to Frank. Most gave him a wide berth, accompanied by curious glances. By now, everyone in town, newcomer and resident alike, knew one of the last of the West's most famous or infamous gunfighters was marshal of the town. Frank stayed only a few minutes. When he left, he used the back door, stepping out into the broken bottle and trash-littered rear of the saloon. He stood for a moment in the darkness, further deepened by the shadow of the building. He heard the outhouse door creak open and saw a man step out, buttoning up his pants. Frank knew who it was. Few men were as tall as Big Bob Mallory.
Big Bob.
Bob paused for just a couple of seconds.
Well, I know that voice for sure. Heard you was law-dogging here at the Crossing, Morgan.
You heard right, Bob. What are you doing in town?
None of your goddamn business, Morgan. That's what.
I'm making it my business. Now answer the question.
Taking a vacation, Morgan. Just relaxing.
A vacation from what? All you do is backshoot folks a couple of times a year. Doesn't take much effort to pull a trigger. I don't think you've ever had a real job.
Ain't nobody ever proved I shot anyone, Morgan. And you damn sure can't do it. I do work now and then, and I can prove it. I do odd jobs here and there to get by. Doesn't take much for me to live on.
Don't screw up in my town, Bob. You do, and I'll be on you quicker than a striking snake.
You go to hell, Morgan.
If you've a mind to, we can sure settle it right now.
You must be tired of living, Morgan.
Anytime you're ready to hook and draw.
I think I'll let you worry. Stew for a while longer.
What's the matter, Bob? Would it help you reach a decision if I turned my back?
Frank watched the big man tense at that. For a few seconds, he thought Bob was going to draw on him. Then Mallory slowly began to relax.
Good try, Morgan. You almost had me going there.
What stopped you?
Bob refused to reply. He stood there, silent.
Don't cause trouble in this town, Bob. Any bodies show up without an explanation, I'll come looking for you. I'll kill you on sight.
That's plain enough.
I hope so.
Mind if I go back in the saloon?
I can't legally stop you, Bob. I could order you out of the town, but won't do that. Not yet.
Getting soft in your old age.
You want to keep running that mouth and find out?
I don't think so. Maybe later.
Anytime. Face to face, that is.
It'll be face to face, Morgan, when the time comes. You can count on that.
The night once more enveloped Frank.
Getting real interesting around town. Hope I can stay alive long enough to see how it all turns out.
Frank slept well that night. No one came prowling around his house in the pre-dawn darkness. Jerry fed the prisoners before Frank reached the jail next morning. There were no new additions to the cell block during the night. The two men walked over to the Silver Spoon to have breakfast.
Any luck finding out the dead man's name?
Not yet. We're going to try again after breakfast. I have my doubts about whether his rifle and saddlebags will ever show up.
Another unmarked grave. People ought to carry something on them in the way of identification.
She's right about that.
I reckon so. There might even be a law about that someday.
The men ate their breakfast and watched as the town's population grew by about 50 people in just the time it took them to eat their food. Several men, their clothing caked with the dirt of hard traveling, stepped into the cafe.
Where's the gold strike?
What gold strike?
Lady, don't act stupid. We've come a long way for this.
There is no gold here. Silver, not gold.
Who the hell asked you?
And this is only a small sample of what we'll be facing in the weeks ahead.
Frank pushed his chair back and stood up, facing the two men. Their eyes flicked briefly to the star on Frank's vest.
I didn't know I needed an invitation to speak.
That two-bit star don't mean a damn thing to me.
Yeah, why don't you sit down and be quiet, Marshal?
I don't believe this.
Jerry pushed back his chair and stood up.
Back off, mister. That's Frank Morgan.
Both miners went suddenly slack-jawed and bug-eyed for a few seconds. They exchanged worried glances. The bigger of the pair finally found his voice.
Sorry, Marshal Morgan. I guess we stepped over the line, ma'am.
It's all right, boys. Sit down, have breakfast, and cool down. Food is mighty good here.
Good idea. I'm hungry as a hog. Ain't neither one of us ate since noon yesterday. After we eat, maybe we can talk about the big gold strike.
Right. Big gold strike.
Frank and Jerry sat back down.
We're really in for it if there's a rumor about gold here.
More than you know, Jerry. I've been in towns after several hundred very angry miners learned strike rumors were false. It can get real ugly in a hurry.
Look there.
Jerry cut his eyes to the street. Frank turned his head and watched as a dozen or so riders, all leading pack horses, rode up the street.
Yeah, and it'll get worse.
At least they're not gun slicks.
Not yet. They'll come next, with the gamblers, con artists, and whores.
There's Mrs. Browning's son. Sneaking around like he's been doing for the past couple of days. He seems to be watching you, Frank.
Frank looked and shook his head.
I thought I saw him yesterday snooping around. That boy is mighty curious about me.
Any reason he should be?
Before Frank could reply, the front door burst open.
It's the Pine Gang!
Here?
Well, one of them.
One?
Who is it, Pete?
That Moran kid. I seen him personal on the edge of town. He's just sitting his horse and watching.
Kid Moran, here? Part of the Pine Gang?
Yes, but that can't be proved. At least no one's ever come forward. I don't think there are any Dodgers out on him either.
Why would he be coming here?
Probably to try me. He's a gun-happy kid looking for a reputation.
He's already killed 5 or 6 men, maybe more than that.
About that. Wounded 2, 3 more. He's quick, so I hear.
Moran is young and fast, Frank.
And I'm older and faster, Jerry. Maybe it won't come to that. We'll see.
Frank picked up his coffee cup, drank the last couple of swallows, then he walked toward the door.
Frank?
With his hand on the door handle, Frank cut his eyes.
It might be a setup.
Might be, Angie. We'll see.
Frank stepped out onto the boardwalk and looked up the street. The kid was still there, sitting his horse. Frank leaned against a support post and waited for the kid to make a move. Kid Moran spotted Frank and began slowly walking his horse toward the center of town. Frank got his first good look ever at the young man with the growing reputation as a gunslick. The kid was of average height and weight, slender build. As he drew closer, Frank could see only two things menacing about the kid: the matched pair of 45s belted around his waist. Kid Moran was as deadly as they came, and Frank knew it. He also knew the kid was lightning fast. The kid rode slowly toward Frank. He touched the brim of his hat and smiled at Frank as he rode past. More of a smirk than a smile, Frank thought, as he held up one hand in return greeting. He watched the kid rein in at a hitch rail in front of the general store and dismount. Frank decided against going over to the store, at least not yet. He did not want to provoke an incident with the kid. Frank felt the kid would try him sooner or later. Conrad Browning walked up the boardwalk. Frank did not see him cross the street and stopped just to Frank's left.
Good morning, Marshal Morgan.
Morning, Conrad. You always up this early?
Always. I like to open up the office for Mother. It's just one less thing for her to do.
Good of you.
Marshal, may I ask you a question?
Sure.
Sometimes you speak as if you attended some sort of institution of higher education. Other times you don't. Why is that?
Frank smiled at the question.
I read a lot, Conrad. Always have at least one book in my saddlebags. I enjoy reading.
I see. Who is your favorite author?
I don't think I have one. A while back, I did get interested in this fella Plato. He has quite a way with words.
Plato? Well, yes, I would say he does.
Hal was across the street watching Conrad as he chatted with Frank. Jimmy and Hal were taking no chances, figuring if the outlaws couldn't grab Vivian, they might try for her son. Kid Moran was still inside the general store.
Who is the young man that just rode into town, Marshal? He seems to be of great interest to you.
Gunfighter. Calls himself Kid Moran.
Kid Moran? How quaint. He appears to be still in his teen years.
He's about 20, I reckon. But he shot more than his share of men.
Why?
Beg your pardon?
Why did he shoot them?
I reckon because he wanted to. Trying to build himself a reputation as a gunslick.
That is important out here?
Well, it is to some folks, Conrad.
Sort of like being the town bully, I suppose.
Yeah, that's a very good way of putting it.
But with a gun?
Yes.
Thank you, Marshal. I believe I have a better understanding of the West now. You have a nice day.
Conrad strolled off toward the Henson office building.
Strange boy. More man than boy.
Kid Moran stepped out of the general store and leaned against an awning post. He stared across the street at the marshal. What was wrong with this? Something wasn't right, but he couldn't put his finger on it. Frank looked up at the buildings across the street. Was there a second shooter on a rooftop somewhere? If so, was it in front or behind him? Did Pine or Van Bergen send the kid to check out things, or did the kid come in on his own? The cafe door opened behind him.
What's wrong, Frank?
I don't know, Jer. Maybe nothing. But I got a funny feeling about this thing.
Far as I know, this is the first time the kid ever rode in alone.
He's been here before, then?
Yep, but always with others. Never alone. Frank, I'm going to check out the back of this block of buildings. Don't step out until you get a signal from me.
Jerry exited the rear of the cafe while Frank waited on one side of the street, Kid Moran on the other. They leaned up against awning support posts and stared at each other without speaking. As it nearly always happened in western towns, the word spread fast and the main street became quiet. No riders, no one walking up and down.
All clear back here, Frank.
Okay, Jer.
Why did he feel so edgy, Frank wondered. He wasn't afraid of facing the kid in a hook-and-draw situation. Frank made it a point to find out all he could about any and all gunfighters, new and old. He knew while the kid was very quick, he almost always missed his first shot. Frank used to be the same, until he spent countless hours practicing, making his all-important first shot count. Fear wasn't a factor in the edgy feelings Frank was experiencing. Frank again searched the rooftops of the buildings across the street. As near as he could tell, no one was up there. The kid still leaned against a post across the street, staring at him.
All right, I've had enough of this. I'm gonna go find out what the kid has on his mind.
The kid immediately straightened up and began walking away from Frank, heading down toward the end of the street. Frank signaled Jerry to stay put and began following the kid. He didn't have a clue what was going on, but something was up. He was sure of that. The kid stopped and looked around him, everywhere but directly at Frank. Then he crossed the street. Frank was now standing in the middle of the wide street.
Well, damn.
As near as Frank could tell, the shots came from near the Henson office building. He looked for the kid, but Kid Moran had vanished.
God damn it.
Frank rounded the corner of the street just as Hal went down in another roar of lead from several pistols in the hands of men standing in the middle of the street in front of the Henson building. The bodyguard spun around, hit several times, and slumped to the dirt. Frank shot the first assailant in the belly, and his second round knocked another down in the street, hip shot. Frank was forced into an alley as several hidden gunmen opened fire, the bullets howling and whining all around him. The third gunman in the street jumped behind a water trough. Frank caught a quick glimpse of Conrad huddled in the doorway of the office building. He didn't appear to be hurt, but was apparently too frightened to seek better cover. Vivian was due to arrive any moment. Frank snapped a quick shot at a man standing in a doorway. Screaming as splinters stuck in his eye, he stepped out of cover. Frank put a bullet in the man's guts that doubled him over and sent him stumbling into the street. He collapsed face down in the dirt and was still. Jerry's sixth gun cracked from the other end of the street.
This ain't working. Let's get the hell out of here.
How?
Through the pass, you nitwit, just like we play him.
Frank and Jerry waited. Jerry ran over to Frank, a pistol in each hand.
Are you hit?
No. Let's see about the boy. I don't think he's hurt, just scared.
Conrad was getting to his feet when Frank and Jerry reached him. His face was ashen, and he was trembling.
They were going to kidnap me. Hal pushed me down and stood in front of me.
He looked at Hal, bloody and dead in the street.
Oh, my God.
Conrad started to move toward Hal, and Frank stopped him.
Easy, boy. No point. He's beyond help.
You don't know that.
I know, boy. I saw him take three rounds in the center of the chest.
I liked that man. I didn't at first, but I really liked him. He saved my life.
That's what he was paid to do, Conrad.
Jerry was checking the dead and the wounded.
Two alive, Frank. One of them ain't gonna be for long.
Good. Jail's getting full.
A crowd stood at the mouth of the street.
One of you get Doc Bracken. Someone get the Undertaker. Move.
He turned to Jerry.
See if you can locate Kid Moran. Don't brace him, Jerry. Just see if he's still in town.
Will do.
Jimmy and Vivian walked up. Vivian was pale with shock. Jimmy was killing mad. Frank could read it in his eyes.
Now settle down, Jimmy. They're gone.
Me and Hal been pards for a long time, Frank. I ain't likely to forget this.
See to Mrs. Brownin and her son, Jimmy, right now.
Jimmy nodded and took Viv's arm, leading her and Conrad toward the front door of the office building and inside. Jimmy stood in the doorway for a moment, looking at the bloody and still body of his longtime friend. The man touched the brim of his hat and walked inside the office, closing the door. The doctor and Malone, the Undertaker, on their way, Frank walked into the street to the hip-shot gunman. On closer investigation, he recognized him. Max Stoddard. He was wanted in several states for murder. There was a hefty reward for his arrest.
You boys are making me a princely sum of money, Max.
Go to hell.
Time I get through here, I'll be nearabouts able to retire, I reckon.
Damn you, Morgan.
Frank reached down and slipped an over-under derringer from the outlaw's left boot.
Were you thinking I'd forget about this little banger, Max?
I was hoping you would, you bastard.
Frank took a long-bladed knife from the sheath on the outlaw's belt.
Not likely, Max. I haven't stayed alive this long by being careless.
Ned or Vic'll get you, Morgan. You can count on that. They'll get you before this is over.
Doc Bracken pushed his way through the still-gathering crowd.
Get the hell out of my way, dammit! I've got work to do!
Mayor Jenkins was right behind him, both of them looking as though they'd jumped into their clothes, unshaven, with disheveled hair.
What the hell happened here?
These men tried to kidnap Conrad Browning.
Frank pointed to the dead and wounded in the street.
Conrad's bodyguard was killed. Conrad and his mother are safe. They're in the office building.
Oh, my God. Do you know any of these men, Marshal?
I know this one, Max Stoddard. He's wanted for murder in several states. All these men are part of the Pine and Van Bergen gangs.
Well, wonderful job, Marshal. Superb.
The mayor wandered off into the crowd. Frank turned his attention to the doctor, watching him work on Stoddard for a moment.
No permanent damage to the hip, but he won't be walking for a while. Some of you men take this hombre over to the jail.
Doc Bracken moved quickly to the other outlaws.
Dead. Dead. And this one won't last long. Some of you men make him as comfortable as possible. He'll be dead in a few minutes.
Damn you to hell, Morgan!
Here now, that's enough of that. You best be making your peace with God.
You horseshit has been, Morgan. I'll...
He arched his back and then relaxed in a pool of blood.
He's gone.
Frank went with the undertaker and searched the pockets of the dead men. They had no identification on them. He took their guns and walked back to his office. Jerry met him on the way.
Kid Moran left town when the shooting started, Frank. Half a dozen people seen him hightail out.
All right. What about this pass the outlaws took to get out of town?
Cuts through the mountains yonder, but it's tricky, so I'm told. If you don't know the way, you can get all balled up and lost and find yourself dead-ended on a narrow trail.
Can't go forward, and you have hell going back.
That's it.
You been up there?
No. It's outlaw country on the other side of the mountains. Only the outlaws use it, and they don't use it very often. Men and horses have been killed up there, slipping off the narrow trails.
So the Pine and Van Bergen gangs are headquartered just over those mountains?
Yep. Not 5 miles away as the crow flies. But they might as well be plumb over the other side of the moon, if you know what I mean.
I do. Let's go see about our new prisoner. Then arrange a nice service for Hal.
A week after the shootout in which Hal was killed, a deputy U.S. Marshal came by train to Denver, took the spur line down to the border, went from there by horse to the crossing, and picked up two of the prisoners Frank was holding. Frank's bank account grew substantially. 10 days later, another deputy U.S. Marshal rode in and promptly rode out with Max Stoddard. Stoddard had a $2,000 reward on his head. So did one of the other dead men. Frank gave half of the money to Jerry. Jerry almost pumped his arm off, shaking his hand. Frank's bank account grew even larger. Hal was buried in the local cemetery. Vivian bought a nice headstone for the grave. Barnwell's Crossing grew by almost 1,000 people in 2 weeks. Most were coming in because of the rumor of a major gold strike, and nothing anyone could say would make them believe that it wasn't true. The county now had a judge, Judge Walter Perlmutter, assigned to the town of Barnwell's Crossing. That made the disposition of those arrested a lot faster. The marshal's office got $2 out of every fine, and Frank split that with Jerry. Judge Perlmutter was a no-nonsense, by-the-book judge who cut no slack to anyone for anything. The jail was usually full at night and emptied out the next morning after court. Frank checked the wall clock. 11 o'clock. He had a lunch date with Vivian at her home in half an hour. After lunch, they were to go riding and spend the afternoon together. Conrad would stay at the office. That would give Jimmy a much-needed break. Frank offered to hire another bodyguard, but Jimmy said he didn't want to work with anyone else. Not for a time yet. Jimmy was gradually working his way out of his grief over the loss of his saddle pod, but he had a ways to go.
I'm gonna go home, wash up some, and change clothes, Jerry. Then I'm over to Mrs. Browning's house. We're going riding down in the valley.
Don't worry about a thing, Frank. I'll take care of any problem that comes up. Y'all have fun and relax.
At his house, Frank cleaned up and changed clothes. Black trousers with a narrow pinstripe, black shirt. He tied a red bandana around his neck and slipped on a black leather vest. He combed his hair, put on his hat, then inspected himself as best he could in the small mirror he bought at Willis's general store.
Well, Morgan, you're not going to win any contests for handsome, but you don't look too bad, considering what you have to work with.
He buckled on his gun belt and stepped out onto the small front porch. The day was sunny and cloudless, the sky a bright blue. A perfect day for a ride in the country. He rode the short distance over to the Browning estate and talked with Jimmy for a few minutes before walking up to the porch and being admitted inside the grandest house in town.
You look lovely, Vivian.
Oh, you wouldn't be the least prejudiced now, would you, Frank?
Not at all. You're as pretty as the day we married.
And you tell great big fibs, Frank Morgan, but do continue.
Lunch was fried chicken, hot biscuits, mashed potatoes, and gravy.
Do you fix this?
I certainly did. The servants have the afternoon off. I told Jimmy to take off as soon as you got here.
How about Conrad? Is Jimmy going to the office?
No, I asked a couple of my miners to look after him. Those men have been with me for years, completely trustworthy.
After lunch, over coffee, Vivian proposed a schedule.
I'm going to change clothes, Frank. I hate to ride side saddle. Will you be shocked if I change into breeches?
I knew you pretty well a long time ago, Viv. Think I'm past being shocked by anything you do.
Don't say I didn't warn you.
She came out of her bedroom a few moments later, wearing very tight-fitting men's jeans and a checkered shirt open at the collar.
Wow. Damn, Viv.
You don't approve, Frank?
Approve is not quite the word.
Come on. Let's get saddled up and get out of this town. I want to forget business for a few hours. I want us to be totally alone. And I want a good, hard ride.
Frank grinned and held his tongue on that one. But oh, what he was thinking.
You're naughty, Frank. But don't ever change.
I'm too old to change now, Viv.